The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are and whatever time of day it is that you are listening here on KCIW 100.7 FM out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon. Welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I'm your host, Misty Young. We are pumping the wattage into your cottage today, and I want you to know we talk fast here, so you have to listen even faster. I will try to slow down. I promise I will. Today, we're going to have another supreme selection of everyday deliciousness in language learning and growth. Because here in Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest, it's about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. It's the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet, and I promise that's true today. My special guest is going to blow your mind. Where the mountains and the redwoods meet the sea, Harbor Brookings is home to me. Now, you know, we talk a lot about things that, to me, are fascinating, and one of the things I find fascinating is organic products and organic and sustainable packaging and things that are going to help the planet and things that are vegan and things that are good for you. So today, I'm excited to welcome our very special guest, Ellery West. And Ellery is the CEO of a company called Organic Essence, based out of Crescent City, just right down the street. I love it. You're right here. And he also has a brand called EcoVision Packaging. Now, I found this company, those of you that are part of the Ocean Mist Power Hour tribe, will remember that we did an interview recently with our hometown hero, Linda Schreiber. And you might remember when we talked with Linda, we talked about Azure Standard and their products and the lines of things that they carry and the way that you can order organics and good quality products right here to your home. And the idea of Organic Essence came up at that time when we talked about it. In fact, Linda had recommended that I purchased some products, and I did, and I love them, absolutely love them. So then I went down the rabbit hole, spent some time on their website, checked out their YouTube videos, learned about, I hope you'll tell the whale story, because I loved that story, and found myself in a world of packaging that I didn't anticipate going down the packaging hole, but I was very, very fascinated with what I found there. So Ellery, what I'd like to do is welcome you to the show and ask you to sort of give yourself intro. Who are you? What do you do it? Why does it matter? Welcome.
Well, thank you, Misty. I'm Ellery West, and I'm the CEO of Organic Essence, and we founded our company in Crescent City in 2006, and one of the first certified organic body care companies, and we committed to only making USDA certified organic products. We did that because organics is about avoiding synthetic chemicals. And so by having the USDA organic logo on all of our products, our customers could know for sure that we didn't have any synthetic chemicals in there that so many natural products have.
Natural. I'm putting those little air quotes around. So many natural products. How is it possible that natural products have synthetic chemicals in them?
Well, natural is a marketing term. So most consumers would think that natural means that it comes from nature and it doesn't have synthetic chemicals in it. But the industry is not regulated for the use of that term, and so marketers have gotten a hold of it. And so now a natural is just a feel-good term. That so like a brand might put a koala bear on there, mm-hmm. or put some leaves, or call their company so-and-so's organic, and the consumer might think that they're getting a product that's safe to use. But if you turn the package over and look at the ingredient panel, you'll see that it has about the same chemicals that everything else has. It'll have detergents and preservatives and chemicals that you don't even know how to pronounce.
Stuff you can't pronounce. You know, that's one of those things. I've always been weird. You know, just there. I said it. Okay, you're listening to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. You're like, well, yeah, duh. She's always been weird. Yes, I've always been weird. I was one of those kids at age 15, 16, reading the shampoo bottle, wondering, you know, what is methoisothiazolinone and what does it do to my head and what is it doing if it gets in my blood and my skin? And I don't remember if that's one of the chemicals in shampoo. I think it is, but I've always wondered about those things, and I've always been real cautious in my life about lotions and that kind of stuff. In fact, I'm very weird about sunscreen. Everybody says, you got to use sunscreen and you'll slather it on your grandkids. Well, let me tell you something. My grandkids are coming this week, and it's a good thing my daughters aren't listening, because I'm not putting one drop of that poison on their skin. I won't do it. We'll put on shirts with long sleeves and we'll go out into the sun and we'll have a good time. I'm not putting chemicals on my kids, and I'm not putting them in their bodies either.
Well, Misty, did you know that Every human alive on Earth today has measurable amounts of synthetic chemicals in every tissue of their body.
Yes, I'm aware of that. It's so irritating. Even those brand spanking new babies that are born.
Yeah, they're already tainted.
Yeah. It's crushing. It almost defeats me in a way, you know, and I'm not a defeatist, but that just, what do we do? Well, what can we do?
I think that the main vehicle of that chemical exposure that we have is one of them is, you touched on it, was detergents. The detergents that you find in shampoos and so-called soaps. Detergents are a very small molecule that's aggressive, about 8 to 20 times more powerful than a soap molecule. And they're known to pass through the skin and into the bloodstream. And because they're so aggressive, they're carrying in the preservatives, the synthetic fragrances, and some dirt into your bloodstream.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. And so I think that's like getting an injection of chemicals by using a shampoo.
Oh.
And so that's why you'll see no SLS claims on a lot of packages, mm-hmm. where it says no sodium lauryl sulfate.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of brands will use low sodium monolaurus sulfate or mm-hmm. some other version of it.
Right.
And saying they don't have SLS, but it's just as bad.
Well, and it's not just the product that we're talking about, but the packaging too, right? So if you get a plastic packaging, like the big thing in packaging these days is no BPA, right? Like everybody wants the no BPA, this and that. And then I just read the other day a study that came out that said the replacement for BPA was, we're all brainwashed. It's like you said, this is a marketing term to say it's natural. Yeah. So the marketing term now says no BPA.
Yeah, it's got BPC in it instead.
Or BPS. And these two things are just as bad, if not worse, than BPA. But we don't know that yet. It'll take 20 or 30 or 40 years before people say, wait a minute, BPC and BPS isn't good either. Like,
that's why you have to pay attention to, the big picture, in my opinion, is that all plastic is toxic. It's just a matter of degree.
Yes.
And so the longer a product sits in a package, the more the chemicals are going to leach into that product. So, for instance, one of my friends says that bottled water really is plastic tea.
Oh, gross.
But if you take a burrito and you throw it into the microwave and you heat it up, you're really going to get a heavy dose of that plastic package because of the migration. And so products that sit on the shelf for a long time. For instance, I like buying organic vegetable oils to cook with.
Mm-hmm.
But I would rather buy a conventional olive oil in a glass bottle than to buy certified organic oil in a plastic bottle.
I'm down with you on that.
100%. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So like the people that are behind the organic program are betraying their marketing message, which is the whole point of organic is to avoid synthetic chemicals.
Right.
And now you're getting a product that's poisoned by its package.
Right.
So it's no longer meaningful.
The plastic itself is a poisonous chemical. It's just not liquid anymore.
That's right. In fact, a big issue that I try to spread the word about is that the issue about plastic isn't the carbon in it. The issue about plastic is the synthetic chemicals, the plasticizers that make it into plastic. They make it so it doesn't break and makes it flexible and rigid and gives it the color and all these things that make plastic this wonderful material. Those are precisely the chemicals that are toxic to life. Those are the chemicals that are poisoning us mm-hmm. and the environment. And even recycled plastic uses more of those chemicals to recycle that plastic.
Oh, God.
And so recycled plastic is really a deception. And in my point of view is that it's actually harmful. Because it gives people the feeling that, I recycle plastic, so I don't have to feel bad about all this extra plastic junk that I'm buying, when really everything that comes in plastic is pollution. It's just a matter of when.
Just the gradation of pollution, right?
Well, yeah. See, there's only two ultimate outcomes for plastic that are physically possible on the planet, and one is burning. And now there's this process called pyrolysis, where you can take plastic under a tremendous amount of heat, and then make it into fuel, and then you can burn that, and you'd say, that seems pretty useful and efficient, but actually the plastic chemicals don't go away.
They don't just go away.
Yeah, and so when you burn that pyrolysis fuel, you're getting all the PCBs and all the dioxins and bad chemicals that you would if you just burnt that plastic straight up in your backyard.
Wow. So now instead of putting it, you know, putting your shampoo into it and then leaching into your shampoo and putting it on your skin, you're going to go ahead and just breathe it right into your lungs.
Particularly in places like India, where the poor people no longer have dry cow dung to burn, they burn plastic.
Oh, God.
And so they're poisoning themselves severely. And then the second a way that plastic will end up, as most people are aware of, is via the environmental degradation. So plastic goes out to the ocean, where it gets beaten down into smaller and smaller bits. On the way, it can choke life. And in fact, they say now that every seabird on Earth now has some plastic in its stomach now. Not 98%, 100% now.
100%.
Yeah.
So any seabird you see out there, you see a cormorant, you see an albatross, yeah, you see a osprey, whatever you're seeing, it's plastic contaminated.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the real problem is the time bomb is that when the bits get small enough, they'll be eaten up by micro life.
Yes.
And then, you know, as we know, the way the food chain works is that larger animals eat smaller ones, and so on.
Yep.
And the day's
becomes more
come,
concentrated, right?
Yeah, bioconcentration. And so the day's going to come when we can't eat any fish out of the ocean or anything out of the ocean because of bioconcentration. Currently, right now, in the state of Washington, if you come across a dead orca on the beach, it's illegal to touch it because it's considered hazardous waste.
What?
Because of dioxin concentration in its fatty tissue.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's the shape of things to come. And that's because of plastic making its way to the ocean. But terrestrial plastic is just as bad. It'll do the same kind of thing to earthbound organisms as well. And so it's a plastic leaches out a toxic load. And it's, like I said, it's not the carbon. So bioplastics that are coming from cornstarch or what have you, they are still made with plasticizers and those chemicals. And so they may biodegrade under certain conditions sooner, but that just means that they'll give up their chemical load a little bit sooner.
Oh my goodness. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, or one of the topics I wanted to bring up was, is hemp a viable option for creating plastics? Because the whole hemp world and the farm bill that passed last year and all of that, everybody's all hypered up about hemp. And I'm among them. I love that idea. But is it in fact true that if you were going to make hemp plastic, it also has to use these plasticizer chemicals? Well, is there a way to do it organically?
Well, what's being done now is that hemp is used as a filler in with plastic. So they're dematerializing a plastic object by putting hemp as a filler. Agricultural waste has been used in plastic for a long time. I think one of the first ones that I became aware of was wheat chaff being used in plastic to thin it out. And then there's products such as like Trex that you use for the building material that's made with sawdust, and that thins out the plastic.
Oh, so it's made with sawdust, and then there's plastic kind of mixed into it and bonded with it.
Yeah, anytime they say resin,
right, resin, or anything like that, aka plastic. Yeah. Polymer, aka plastic.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
That's how it works.
Wow. That's pretty creepy. So hemp is not the cure-all, save-all, end-all for plastics
in
the future.
Well, if it's pure hemp and it's been molded or what have you, then it's the way I look at it is that anything that comes from nature and then goes back to nature at the end of its life is sustainable.
Yes.
So if an object is made out of pure hemp and doesn't have a lot of chemicals in it, then of course it is ultra-sustainable.
It would be, right? Because if you could just literally transform and then reform back into nature.
Well, the main, the gold standard of recyclability is paper. Paper comes from trees. And yes, there is a carbon footprint involved with harvesting the tree and grinding it down and making it into paper. And fortunately, via government regulation over the last couple generations, paper production is much cleaner than it ever has been before. It used to be a great source of dioxin, and it was very toxic. Paper plants were really bad places to be around. But now they've closed the cycles, and so the raw materials are recycled indefinitely. So when they set up a paper plant now, they'll bring in a load of the sulfur and a load of whatever, the different chemicals that they use, and they never need to bring in any more because it's efficiently recycled.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is amazingly good
news. So kind of a closed-loop system.
As much as possible.
And using less chemicals. Because they're recycling
now,
the chemicals
a big
within
issue
the
in
process.
Paper is the bleaches that they use, particularly in the recycling process. And so there are oxygen-based bleaches as well as chlorine-based bleaches.
Right.
And some are better than others.
That's really interesting you bring that up. I have a good friend who helps me kind of learn a lot. And the other day we were talking about composting. And he said, oh yeah, put your coffee grounds in your compost. It's good stuff for your compost, and you could put your unbleached coffee filters in there too because they'll degrade. And I was like, well, what's the difference between bleached and unbleached? Like, hey, I don't know everything. I'm brand new at all of this stuff. I don't know. What is the difference? I mean, why wouldn't I put my coffee filters in my compost?
Oh, well, there's will be some residues of the bleach that's still in the paper.
So it's just not sustainable. It's putting chemicals in with the worms that I lovingly tucked into the compost.
Well, it's a matter of degree. You know, life is very resilient, and
yes.
All of us wouldn't be here today if we didn't withstand a certain amount of chemical.
Right.
You know.
Assault.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so, it is chemical assault, isn't it?
Yeah, and so... for instance, if you take a newspaper, and people use newspapers as a compost material, you'll put it on the ground as like a mulch to keep the weeds down. There's the chemicals in the ink.
Right.
So the newsprint itself is relatively inert, but then there's going to be a small amount of the ink. And of course, the printing industry says that the inks that they use in color printing and black and white printing is... the chemicals or the minerals that would be found in the Earth's crust. So I don't know if that's a marketing gag or not.
Yeah.
But
sounds like marketing to me. It sounds like gobbledygook.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that is kind of interesting to note is at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, back in the 1860s, the Germans were leaders in it, and they really advanced the development of colors and dyes. And that was a huge boon to humanity at the time because... essentially, everything was dull colored, you know.
Right.
And so, having brightly colored clothes and things, paints and what have you, was this wonderful gift in terms of the delight that it would bring people. But those chemicals that make those colors, there again, are toxic. And so, we see that since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, that people's health has been declining steadily as more and more chemicals come out into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
On a regular basis. In fact, in 1860, the studies show that the average age of menarche, that would be a girl getting her first period, was 16.6 years old. Guess how old it is now?
Oh, it's way younger than that.
10.6 years
old. Oh my God, little girls.
With some girls having their first period around 8 years old. That is a serious issue.
That is.
And I believe that it's mostly due, if not entirely due, to synthetic chemical exposure.
Well, and I would add to that, you know, there's a lot of chemicals and hormones that are coming in through food as well. So you're talking about exposure, and I would add to it, it's not just the products we put on our body. I would believe, my own personal bias, is that it's more about the products we put into our bodies.
Well, industrialized food production.
Right.
All those shortcuts that make more food, more
inexpensive. And make it grow faster and make it grow thicker and make it, you know, more food faster to market equals more profit. I'm into profit. I like profit, but not at the expense of human health.
Well, actually, that's unsustainable. If you kill off your customers, are you going to stay in business, right?
Well, you're going to do business on both ends of the transaction, right?
Guess,
you're going to be like AstraZeneca. They actually manufacture the pill for girls, right? So you don't get pregnant. And on the other end of the spectrum, they offer anti-cancer medicine, breast cancer medicine. And we know there's a connection between the pill and breast cancer. So AstraZeneca, hello, they're making money on both ends of the transaction. You know, I don't like that. I respect it. It's really weird. I mean, I respect the fact that they're making money on both ends of the transaction. You know, I'm in the restaurant business. I'm kind of tempted to open a gym business too, you know, because I want people to also work out, you know, keep their health. It's important. And then that would be smart, right? Then you're making money on both ends of the transaction. I get it. I don't necessarily love it.
Yes. Yeah, so I believe that my mission in life and business is to avoid synthetic chemicals and to have products that consumers, my customers will know that are free of synthetic chemicals, something you can trust. And so that's why we carry the USDA logo. And that's why we use the paper packaging we use.
I love it. I want to ask you about the whale story. And in leading out to that, I want to tell you that I recently read an article in Forbes. And the title of the article is that, this is the title, we're now at 1 million plastic bottles per minute. And 91% of those are not recycled. And so essentially what they're saying is that reports are indicating this dire global statistic that says humans buy 1 million plastic bottles per minute. That just crushes me to hear that. Mm-hmm. And that 91% of them are not recycled. And on top of that, over 500 billion plastic bottles will be sold in the year 2020 alone.
Well, and like I said, that recycling really is a deception.
Right.
And so
you said there were two things that can happen for them, right? Two outcomes, either burning, pyrolysis, or the environmental degradation, either ocean or terrestrial, right?
That's right.
So that's
so
it. It doesn't go away.
Yeah, that it's recycled is just what they call moral license. It gives you the feeling that you're being good, but you're not doing anything really. And so, but back to the whale story, my wife and I moved up from Los Angeles area back in 2004. And in 2006, when the USDA organic program allowed non-food products to certify to the then food standard, they made it into an agricultural standard, same difference. So now we have organic cotton and organic body care products. And so we were one of the first to sign up for that and do that. In 2008, we down in Crescent City, we were driving to town by South Beach, and we saw a beached whale. And we stopped the car and got out and touched it, and it was a 30-foot juvenile sperm whale that it had starved to death with a stomach full of plastic. And that really affected us. And my wife, Gail, said, we've got to do something about this. We can't keep using the plastic packaging.
Because, so even you guys at the time were using plastic packaging, even in your organic products.
That's all that was available. We were buying it by the pallets. Yeah.
Wow. And so, this must have been a big shift for you. I mean, first of all, it was a mindset shift. It was like you got whacked upside the head by a sperm whale.
Yes. Yeah. Really. Literally.
Wow. Yes.
And so we traveled to the largest packaging shows in the country at Westpac in Los Angeles. And it's a giant convention center full of thousands of sellers of plastic packaging.
Yes.
And they made a big deal about all the sustainable this and sustainable that. And so tell me about your sustainable packaging. And the vendor would say, well, our plastic package is made with windmill power.
And so, nice.
Well, that's not quite what I was looking for. I wanted something that was inherently, physically sustainable. And it,
not just pretend sustainable.
Well, really, you know, I'm glad your factory has a green roof on it, but you know, it's not going to solve our problem here.
Yes.
And so we were getting really depressed because there was just a lot of marketing. Kind of like the natural industry.
Kind of like the natural industry, but, yes.
We came across a paper booth where they made the paper canisters, uh-huh. Sort of like the Quaker Oats canister.
Oh, you know, right,
The
yes.
canisters that tea comes in, the paper cylinder.
Right, kind of right, thing. Right.
And I went to them and I thought, oh, Eureka, we found it. Can you make a paper package for my creams? And they're like, nope, that's impossible.
No can do. yeah.
And so I said, well, do you have a grease-resistant paper liner? And they said, oh, yeah, that's a stuff called glassine. It's a special kind of paper that resists grease. And I said, well, how about if I send you some drawings and maybe you can make the parts and I'll put a jar together? And they said, yeah, sure, we'll do anything. And so that's how we invented our first package.
It's so amazing. And those packages, for instance, the Organic Essence scrub butter, the Shea scrub butter, is it called Citrus Splash?
That's one of them. Yes, we have three.
That's one that I have. I absolutely adore it, by the way. And when I got it, Linda Schreiber, who recommended that I take a look at this product, she said, you know what I love about this is the packaging. She very specifically called that out to me. And she said, it'll hang out in your shower. It's fine. You know, she said, it's not going to get messed up because it's cardboard packaging, essentially. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's in your shower.
That was a real achievement for us because paper packaging doesn't hold up in wet environments very well. And in developing this product, we were trying to make a product that you could actually use in the shower, but the package couldn't fall apart before you were done with the product.
Good idea.
Yeah. And so one of the challenges in packaging world. And so we worked with a food coating company for several years to develop this coating that we use on that package. And so as long as it has a chance to dry out, you could soak it completely. And as long as it has a chance to dry out, you can get it completely soaked the next day and so on. And we actually made prototypes and put them in our shower and got them wet every single day.
Nice.
And wow, it really worked. And so long as it doesn't sit in standing water.
Right.
And that's how it biodegrades.
If it sits
in standing water or is in your compost pile long enough and that moisture is in there long enough, it'll break down that coating. And then, of course, all the bugs and everybody gets to work.
They get to eat it, right?
Well, that's
transform it.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. I love it. I love that you talked about, you know, you had this idea and then you took action. See, I'm like a big action taker. I like the idea that somebody goes, oh, I should do this. Most people don't take action.
Had I known, trailblazing, that's what I call it.
Yes.
Trailblazing is 10 or 20 times harder than walking down an established path.
It sure is.
You'll have obstacles pop up out of nowhere. Everything is hard. It's so easy for a brand to simply go online, get a catalog, and order up a 4-ounce double wall plastic jar made out of polypropylene or what have you, and have it shipped out at only 24 cents each. We'll take, so many hundred gross of this and get started.
Right.
But no. When you're trailblazing, it's just one thing after another. Cost is through the roof. The hand labor involved, because there's no automation, because there's no machines made for it, gets very expensive.
Right. And again, you're trailblazing too. So you're figuring it out as you go.
Yes.
You're creating the industry, essentially. You're creating the process. How has that turned into others following you? And has that turned into others following
you? Well, it's brought a lot of attention to us. And our challenge is to get our processes automated so that we can get that cost down there so it's competitive. Because really, at the end of the day, most brands are focused on staying in business.
Yep.
And they want to use paper packaging, but they need to be able to afford it. And so if a package, say, for instance, a lip balm tube would cost, say, 6 cents at a decent volume of plastic screw up a lip balm tube. And if you have to pay 90 cents, it's a no-go.
Right, right.
And so that's what the handmade paper version costs.
90 cents.
But with automation, it should get down there to under 20 cents.
Wow. It's just amazing. And I kind of have been unconscious about plastic for a long time. I just didn't realize
it's ubiquitous.
It.
It's just part of the environment. It's a
right.
part of, you think of buying a product. You don't think of buying its packaging.
Right. And I mean, even sitting here in the studio and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, my lips are dry. You're talking about lip balm. My lips are dry. And I want to reach over here into my bag and pull out my Burt's Bees because it's good stuff, right? But it's in a little plastic tube. I feel like I can't escape it. I mean, I'm literally looking around. My hand fan that I'm holding here because I burn up while I'm working, it's made with plastic.
Yeah.
My phone is made with plastic. My car has plastic all over it. My shoes have plastic. I mean, my pen isn't plastic, but it just seems like everything.
Oh, I'll bet you there's plastic in there somewhere.
You think?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there might be. I don't know. Somebody gave this to me as a very spendy pen.
Oh, okay.
Who would spend $100 for a pen? I would not do it. But
well, it
this
just
person
has better
did.
Plastic in it.
I don't know. It's heavy. I feel like it's metal. But you're probably right. We could open it up and see.
Well, do you know that paint is plastic? Most paints are plastic. The varnish on the floor,
what?
Plastic. Yeah,
oh,
polymers. Yeah.
Oh, polymer. Duh, right. Yeah. So, when I say I've been unconscious for a long time about that, I didn't realize it. I mean, I'm really starting to get a big picture of the difficulties that plastics and these products bring to
the
world.
Well, the one that's breaking my heart are like clothing. There's a lot of wonderful fabrics out there. They're plastic, and they're known to the fibers that, the lint in the dryer that you pull out, a lot of that is mostly plastic.
What kind of fabrics are plastic? Cotton is not plastic, right? But it's
polyester.
Nylon,
rayon,
polyester. Oh my gosh.
Almost all carpets that you can buy, the carpet in here is plastic.
Wow. It's everywhere.
Everywhere. It's a wonderful material.
It is a wonderful material. It's done a lot for life, but it's going to ultimately it's anti-life.
Well, I don't think of it that way. I think it's anti-human. It's not necessarily anti-life, because life will adapt to this new environmental material, right? It's a part of the environment. Life will adapt to it. It's just that humans will have a hard time adapting to it. We're pretty sensitive creatures at the top of the food chain. And so chemical exposure, it has serious consequences, like the average age of menarche.
Yeah, that's really
trippy.
And so
if we follow that for four more generations, the average age will be around 6 years old. I think the wheel's going to fall off before then. Either we'll clean up our act and figure things out, or something will crash, because it's a serious issue. So it was a local naturopath here. I had this conversation with them. And she said, mothers that are only eating organic and staying away from cosmetics during pregnancy or before, and then raise their daughters organic and keep them away from all the chemicals, they will actually have a 15 or 16 year old menarche, which means that
it's more normal.
Well, it's very clear that that is synthetic chemical exposure.
Right.
And don't forget that the clothes you wear are synthetic chemicals, the fire retardants on them and all that. And so the dyes themselves.
Right. Well, I just don't think we realize really the big picture of how all of this stuff is off-gassing and emanating and just, it's
well, we
so
see that
everywhere.
From people who are, that have sensitivities. There are people that can't wear regular clothes.
Yeah.
They can only wear natural fibers that are undyed. And you think, that's an outlier. But what it is they're like the canaries in the coal mine
forest. Right, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's that weight of all the chemicals that are coming out every year. So that's why that, if you look at that graph of the age of menarche, and which is one of like thousands of graphs. Let's talk about—
Of course, thousands of graphs, thousands of statistics and measurable things that we can look at that says, here's what's happening.
Well, like Asperger's and
right,
asthma.
Right, the autism spectrum.
Yes, and so what do they say now? I just heard something crazy that it's expected by 2030 that half of all children will have autism?
Yes.
Wait a minute.
Right, what?
Half.
Half, right.
That's a crime against our children.
It is. And yet, I also heard recently a very interesting thing. You know, there's a young lady who's kind of taken the internet by storm. Her name is Greta Thunberg. She's out of Sweden. She did a TEDx talk. And, you know, for the listeners here, two things. First of all, if you've joined us here today on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, welcome. We're glad to have you. We're visiting with Ellery West. He's the CEO of Organic Essence based out of Crescent City, California. And he has a line of organic body care products that are also in his own brand of packaging called EcoVision Packaging. And Ellery is just completely fantastic and knowledgeable and fascinating and interesting. And B, I think he's a wealth of information about how we can do better. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Well, thank
you. So KCIW likes to bring in the Ocean Mist Power Hour right here on KCIW out of Brookings, Oregon, 100.7 FM on your dial. Or if you're on the podcast, you can do this or be here anytime, anywhere in the world, you can be listening in. You know, I like the idea that there are people like Greta Thunberg out there who did a TEDx talk, or it might have been a full TED talk, can't remember which it was. In November, and she sort of burst onto the scene. And the short version of her story is, I was eight, and I heard about climate change. I heard about global warming, and I heard that it was unstoppable, and I heard that, you know, and it made me depressed. First of all, when I hear a little girl, she's 16 now, in my mind, she's still a little girl, young lady, but she says, I was eight. And that it bugged her so bad that she went into some kind of selective mutism and then Asperger's. I mean, like she then says, and when I was 11, I became ill. So her story says, I was eight. I heard this thing. When I was 11, I became ill. It's almost as if she chose that. I don't know. I haven't gone that far into her story. And she says, but now that I'm 16, you know, in the wisdom of her ages, right? Now that I'm 16, and she was diagnosed when she was 11 with Asperger's. She says, you know, I'm wondering if the people that could do something about climate change, this is the people that are here now, if they weren't doing something about it now, the time to take action was 30 years ago. She says, now the time is not now for us to start taking action. We should have done that 30 years ago. But what she says that's so amazing is, when I turn 75, my grandchildren, if we live that long, are going to say, you were alive and all those people were alive when they could have done something about it. Why didn't they? Why didn't they take action? The second thing she says that blew my mind was, you know, I have Asperger's and I'm kind of wondering if the people with Asperger's, which this group of people on the spectrum, referring to the autism spectrum, if we're the normal ones and you people are the crazy ones. I thought that's pretty interesting, you know?
Well, the way the statistics are going, they will be the
they
majority
will be.
At some point.
They will be. They absolutely will be. If half of the kids by 2030 are on that autism spectrum, that's going to be the new normal.
Well, that harkens to what I was discussing about the fact that life is adapting. And so our species is adapting to this chemical exposure in its own way. The concern is what really is Asperger's or autism virtuous, or does it really help us? And the question, you know, I wouldn't pass judgment on it, but I can't see that as being a really positive thing for us as a species.
I don't know. There are whole societies that actually allow for genetic testing and the abortion of children that are identified as having Down syndrome. Is that positive for our society or for our species? I don't know.
Well, think about the deaf community. Or the not hearing community, they feel that they're normal, and that to give the ability to hear to a child actually is wrong.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. How crazy is that? I mean, I think that's crazy personally, because I'm one of those weirdos that gets sucked down the YouTube hole. I love going down the rabbit hole and looking at the videos of people that are hearing for the very first time. Have you ever seen one of those videos?
No, I haven't.
Well, get your tissue box ready because it is unbelievable. And I've seen it happen for little kids that are really little, like 8 months old or 3 months old, and women and men up into their, well into their ages, and they get those little implants into their head.
Cochlear,
I forget what
implants,
it's called. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They get the implant. And this, and as soon as they start hearing, the universal response that I have seen almost with everybody, the babies don't do it so much, hands come up and cover the face, and immediately they just bust out bawling. It is the most emotionally laden thing I've ever seen. And little babies who are hearing their mother's voice for the very first time, their whole little face turns upside down. They're like, what have I been missing? And they just bust out crying. It's the weirdest thing. And it's just so emotionally just touching, you know?
Well, I think it's point of view. It's you know, how you adapt and where you're at. And so the not hearing community feels that they have a special culture.
They do.
That they're their own special language.
Yes.
And the same trials and tribulations that they have as a group that the rest of us don't. And so they feel like they're a special community.
They are.
And so, and nobody wants to feel that looked down upon, that you're disabled or you're less than.
Yep.
And so I can understand where they're coming from on that. And that's some of the big challenges of being alive today is how do you sort out these things? So I think most of us try to just say, oh, wow, then put it out of mind.
But you didn't. And that's what I really love about you and your wife. You didn't do that. You know, you went out and you saw this whale on the beach and you said, wow, we have to do something.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you and I feel like you're a superhero. In fact, I'm going to nominate you to hometown hero status, which is something we do here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. And what I realize is partly I feel defeated, like there's just nothing I can do. And I'm going to ask you about that in just a second. And partly I feel really empowered. Like if you could just go and you've got this business and you're doing all of this and you said, wait a minute, this whale slapped me upside the head. I have to make a change. I have to do something different. And then you trailblazed. You blazed a trail.
Well,
you made something happen.
And I think
key.
The big part of making it happen is getting the word out. And one of the neat things about that is I've noticed that, like the girl you just mentioned, it's the young people. It's not it's not the baby boomers. It's not the millennials. It's Generation Z. It's the kids that are in school right now, who seem to have the greatest interest. And well, frankly, they have the most at stake. The rest of us will probably live out our days just fine. But these guys that are starting out in life are facing the legacy that we've bestowed upon them, this huge toxic load, these ways of doing things. And another interesting thing to point out is that we live in a clear plastic box that we don't even know is there.
Mm.
For instance, when we first brought out our paper lip balm tube, we were at one of the major trade shows, and the chief packaging engineer for Burt's Bees, the lip balm guys, right?
Uh-huh, yep.
They came up, and he was a 40-some-odd-year-old guy, very well-educated, and he was emotionally distraught.
He came to see you.
Yes.
The Burt's Bees guys came to see you guys.
Came to see my booth, and he was physically shaking. His hands were trembling.
Wow.
And he had a lip balm in his hand, and he was and it actually fell and hit the floor.
Wow.
And he said, I've been working on sustainable package for lip balms for years. How did you, nobody, come up with this? So,
how did you do it? Right?
How did you, nobody,
you do it?
Nothing.
How could nobody do
you
it?
You cockroach.
But how about 90 cents? I mean, for me, I'm one of those people like, I don't care if the tube of lip balm cost me an extra 90 cents or a dollar. I don't care. I'm going to spend that. I don't care what organics
cost
in the market.
Well, you're a unique
person,
and I think that all the brands want to use that package. And when it gets affordable, all of them will, because the demand is so great. It's they just don't have any alternatives. And so now they're pushing this recycled plastic content, which, as I point out, is meaningless.
Right.
In fact, deceptive.
Right. It's a psychological.
And then they
ploy.
Go into the bioplastic, or they have the hemp mixed into the plastic,
yep.
And, you know, it's all still plastic.
Yeah. And is it a little better? I mean, help me psychologically here. Is it a little better? It's not really, is it? Because what you were saying earlier is that it just degrades faster and puts
the
stuff in the environment faster.
No, it's harmful because it puts us to sleep. It makes us feel like we're doing something.
Right.
And we're not.
Oh,
and so,
my goodness.
Well, we can feel, we give ourselves license to buy even more plastic. And it's a shame when you want to buy something that you need, and the only comes in plastic. You have no choice. It must come. And yet some people say, oh, but how can we do it? We must have plastic packaging because of product protection and what have you. But some of the older listeners here will remember back in the day that yogurt came in a paper cup that had a wax coating on it.
Yeah,
remember?
I do. All yes, of them. Yes.
And it was back in the late 70s and 90s when Yoplait came out with their funny little plastic cup.
Uh-huh, their little tubey thing with the little foil pull off.
And now there is no paper cups for yogurt. And I think White Mountain has yogurt in a glass mason type jar, and which is nice that they're turning the corner and they're certified organic, which I applaud. But I think that all sorts of products. Okay, so the biggest thing in the packaging industry now is flexible packages. Those are the pouches with a little Ziploc top on it.
Oh yeah.
Or tubes or toddles, and so paste tubes of all kind. And flexibles are. So convenient, and they give excellent product protection. So from a package designer's point of view, let's look at like a toothpaste tube. Well, compared to a jar, okay, why do we buy toothpaste in tubes and not jars? Well, because if you had toothpaste in a jar and you take your toothbrush, which may not be super clean,
right,
and scoop it into that jar.
Right, you're contaminating.
And then all those
bacteria are going to grow. You're going to get mold in your toothbrush.
But like, with that toothpaste tube, the product comes out and pinches off right at the end, fresh every time.
Right.
So there's no chance for contamination to spread throughout the product.
Yeah.
So they're super clean, keeps oxygen down so the product stays fresher.
Right.
Because you screw on the cap and so there's no oxygen there. So there's a lot of virtues to it. But for instance, in my local store, you buy some cereal, it comes in the Echo Pack and it's the plastic bag. And then on the package, they'll say, well, it saves, you know, so many tons from the landfill. Well, now let's get clear about this. A paper going to the landfill is not a crime, right? And you may call that waste, but the real waste, the toxic waste, is the plastic. Mm. Okay, so now you buy a cereal that comes in a cardboard box, it has a plastic bag on the inside. Okay, wrong again, because there you go, you still have that plastic.
Right.
So the real answer is let's go back to the future. Let's go back to the 60s before they had this plastic revolution.
Uh-huh.
And how did we have cereal in those days? Oh, right. It was a paper bag
with that had a waxy coating on it.
And it might have had a little thin foil layer on it.
Uh-huh. I remember.
Yeah. And in fact,
my sugar smacks, those sugar smacks that were
exactly
so healthy for me,
you know?
Oh my God.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the corn pops. Yeah. They had the exact same package. In fact, that package just went away. The last sighting of that was about 2 years ago. And they switched over to plastic.
All plastic. Right.
What timing, huh?
Arg is right. Just what do we do? In fact, I want to ask you, and to those of you, our listeners, thank you for being here. Thank you for joining us on the Ocean Mist Power Hour right here on KCIW FM 100.7 on your dial. And everywhere on the World Wide Web, you can listen to us anywhere in the world from any device that can access the internet on our podcast or from our website, kciw.org. We're talking today with Ellery West. He's the CEO of Organic Essence, and he has a brand called EcoVision Packaging. Not only is he interesting and informative, he's also well-spoken and articulate. And so I hope you're learning something. I surely am as well. You know, Ellery, one of the things you mentioned was we have to take action to make it happen, to make change. And you mentioned that Generation Z, the young people, are the people that are really going to have to take this to the next level. Here in Brookings, Oregon, a few weeks ago, my husband and I were looking down at the port, and we could see this school bus, big blue school bus, totally looked like a hippie bus. We're like, oh, dude, the hippies are in town. That's awesome. We get out the binoculars. We're checking them out. We're like, total hippies. It's our people. Let's go check it. So we drove down and we looked at it. And the thing was from Hawaii. And I forget what it said on the outside
of it. A bus from Hawaii.
Yeah, it was really weird. It was a bus from Hawaii. It was an Aloha bus. But we found out later, because there was an article in the paper, that there were these two brothers. I believe they were the shippers. And they were going down the coast. They started, if I'm not mistaken, in Bellingham, Washington, and they came right here to Brookings, and they visited with the kids at our middle school.
I read about them.
Remember reading about that?
Yes.
I was so thrilled with what those boys were doing. I was like, I want to follow them. I want to give them money. I want to say, let me buy you a tank of gas. What can I do to help you? Because they're one stop in Brookings. they lit an idea in my head, which just said, I've been unconscious about plastic.
That there's a new club in the middle school for sustainable anti-plastic?
Did not know that.
Yes. Yeah, I think it recently formed.
I'm making a note
and
here.
And it may have been, I don't know for sure, but I think that they're related.
So about sustainability, and you think maybe that came up because of this visit of these young men?
Well, it seems possible,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll do that. I'll follow up on that because I think that's really cool. So kind of two things that come into my head. One is my own personal unconsciousness, which frankly makes me feel fairly embarrassed, you know? I mean, I think of myself as fairly, I think I'm conscious. But when I read that article, I was like, God, I'm so lame. I mean, I buy organic carrots. They come in a bag. I buy organic celery. Mm-hmm. Comes in a bag. I buy my potatoes. Oh, you got to use a bag. Well, I immediately shifted. I've always saved bags. You know, I save them. I wash them. I reuse them. But I started taking my own little bags to the grocery store to put in my own fruits and vegetables mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So I made some small changes on my own, but I realized there's so much more I can do. The second thing is, when I think about this huge packaging debacle that happens, I don't have a membership at Costco, but in the past when I have, one of the reasons I stopped going to Costco was you buy something and it comes in massive plastic packaging. And we used to call it old people proof. And it would, I was, you know, in my 40s at the time, and even opening these things, you could get cut.
Why I ended up having a dozen pairs of scissors in the house just to get through the plastic packages.
Right.
I think a lot of us do that.
Well, kind of setting the stage for that. And thank you for mentioning the club about sustainability in the middle school. I really appreciate that. What can young people do? If there were three steps or three things that you would recommend that young people do, what would they be?
Consciousness, spread the word.
Okay.
The second thing would be to change your behavior in terms of make choices. So choose something more sustainable over something that isn't. We're seeing a lot of new retail store ideas, concepts, the bring your own bag type thing where you
yes.
the bulk stores.
Yes.
We see them popping up all around the country. Also, another thing is to dedicate yourself towards solving these problems because it is a business proposition. People will need to have packages or they'll need to have products that are more sustainable. Well, I'm not just talking about consumer goods products, furniture, clothing, household goods. You know, our whole world is full of plastic and there's just unlimited opportunity on finding ways to give other people the opportunity to make better choices. See, that's the thing. Right now, we're in a straitjacket. You say you go into Costco and you're consigned to buying a lot of plastic. Well, I say it's that way at Fred Meyer's and everywhere else. It's that
yeah.
the place is floor to ceiling, walls, a sea of plastic. And you know, on one hand, a cell phone or a computer or a plastic part that's in your car, it has a little more virtue in my mind than something that's just used momentarily and thrown away. It's that plastic coffee cup. It's the little utensils that are used for moments and then thrown away.
Oh my God!
And that's the low hanging fruit we need to go after first. Is the stuff that is not durable. We need to wean ourselves off of that first, and then we can tackle the larger, more difficult ones later. But I foresee a world, in a way, back to like the way it was in the 50s, where the idea was to buy an object that would be durable and last for many years. It might be made out of metal or ceramic or what have you, that was crafted well enough and didn't have planned obsolescence baked into the cake to where, like, you know what? I had a friend who was in a clothing business where she would have these dye sub. You know familiar what dye sub is?
Uh-uh.
It's called dye sublimation. Basically, you can put a special decal or transfer paper through a printer.
Okay.
And then you could iron it onto the clothing and then it would dye sublimation. And then she would embellish it on top of that. Well, so she was using her printer a whole lot. And she said that one day late at night, she was using her printer and on the screen, it said, your product has exceeded its lifetime and will no longer function, essentially buy a new one. And it was a perfectly fine printer.
Wow.
And it was programmed to fail. It could only print X many thousand prints.
And then it was done.
And
planned obsolescence.
It was. And that was like the most egregious example of something where it was the printer worked fine, the software turned off.
Wow.
So she was angry, you know.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
My own personal experience with that is I've had a Sonicare toothbrush for, who knows, I don't know, 15, 16, 20 years maybe. I don't know. I've had it for a long time. And it used to be, I personally don't really like buying the new heads all the time, and I take great care of my teeth. It's important to me. But the whole thing is plastic, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed in the last 2 years or so, those brushes, first of all, they started showing you sort of like there was this little blue line on it, and then the blue line would go down, 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 and then like, oh, the blue line is gone. You
time
need
to
buy
new
more.
One.
Yeah. Now there's no more blue line. Now the little bristles, they just go ahead and start falling out in your mouth.
Or they get soft and don't scrub anymore.
Right. And it is like total planned obsolescence. It is, I think I can say this on the radio. I'm saying it is pissing me off. You know, and so I'm thinking, okay, do I need to get some bamboo toothbrushes? But I love that toothbrush. I don't know what to do. I'm frustrated
well,
by it.
Well, you have, as a consumer, you have the opportunity to go to another brand and vote with your dollar and find it. Hopefully there's another brand out there that gives you the choice of
yes.
buying one that's a little more durable, that maybe you can pay more. But, you know, like my mother said, she used to wear, spend a lot of money on her black wool skirt. And so she spent a lot of money on her black wool skirt that would last for many years, and it would go with all the fashion trends that would change. And so it was like an investment
yes.
that over the long haul was less expensive. Okay, so it's that thinking applied to everything. We need to have things be more durable, but it kind of goes against the grain of our consumption mindset of
yes.
our civilization is
yes.
to consume more, to have more. And I believe that consuming is a real inherently human thing. We need to eat, right? And
mm-hmm.
and we need stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's no apologies for wanting stuff to enhance our lives. The thing is that we need to do it responsibly.
Yes.
We need to do it in a way that doesn't harm us and others. And so that's where durable things come in. And I think I'd like to see our civilization hold craftsmanship and higher quality and higher regard. Rather, and so one of the crimes against humanity, in my opinion, is fast fashion. So you're buying that rayon shirt that's going to last for just poorly made.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially pollution that's going to be used for, it's almost, mm-hmm. it's just one step up from throwaway mm-hmm. Plastic cutlery.
Right, right. It's
plastic
like
plates.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's like a plastic bottle that you're going to put on your body for maybe 90 days.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe
not
a couple
even,
years, maybe.
If that. But fast fashion
away.
Isn't made to last a couple years. They want
right.
you to buy another one
right,
sooner.
Fast fashion. Right, mm-hmm. everybody wants to make profit. And you know, we talked earlier about this idea that really a lot of this isn't going to take place. A lot of this change won't take place until it hits people in their pocketbook. And I love that you said, vote with your dollars, because we can help. That's how we get there, right? We vote with our dollars is going to change the pocketbook of the people at the top that are making the big
money
on the plastic.
Well, it sends
the
message. And if we look at the big picture, okay, let's step back a notch. Okay, just this year, a two-year mega factory that it took 2 years to build, mega factory down in Houston, just came online this year that makes plastic pellets. Okay,
yeah.
And as we know, like I'm sure some of our listeners have heard of the cancer clusters around Baton Rouge, Louisiana,
yes,
around a plastic factory. Now, maybe they're cleaning up their effluent around the factory, but nevertheless, the point I'm trying to make is that we're accelerating the production of plastic every year. And
oh.
that's just here in the States. And, you know, China, their foot's on the pedal,
right.
and they're producing more plastic than ever. And see, that is the main feedback loop that we need to establish is that
we don't want it
we don't
anymore.
Need so
we
much more plastic
it.
To be
right.
made
right? right
and so recycling just it doesn't slow down the production of new plastic. We can't recycle enough. It's not
we can't recycle it fast enough,
as we're finding out.
And
it's not economically
healthy.
Viable to sort it out,
right?
See, that's what they're finding out, is that we can't pay enough people to sort out all that those plastic bits. There's contamination issues, the different kinds of plastic, and then at the end of the day, you still have to add more chemicals to renew it into a new form of plastic.
Yeah. Eventually, we have to just be done with plastic,
well,
it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
And it is just
and
so incomprehensible.
Well, what it is that we're short-circuiting a feedback loop that's really important. I think that all humans, from when we're babies or children, we learn the value of money. You get a little bit of allowance money, and you get to choose a little bit of a candy, and you're going to make the best choice you can, right?
Yes.
And so we're from babyhood, we are trained to be excellent price shoppers.
Yes.
And so, but we're not getting the full pricing signals in the price of plastic goods because we don't have the cost, the end of life cost built into it.
Right.
So say, for instance, you buy something out of wood, cotton, or paper, there is no virtual end of life cost that's significant.
Right.
But on plastic, there is.
Right.
And so what if we had taken that cost of actually doing something with that? Well, it'd be tremendously expensive because it's still toxic at the end of the day. But just what if? Then people would have a better idea of what they were buying, and they would have these price signals. So that 6 cent plastic lip balm tube might really cost 15 cents or 20 or 50 cents when you consider what do you do with those toxic chemicals? How do you actually break down those plasticizers into a form that actually is not dangerous to life? That's going to be really expensive. And so if that was built into everything that was plastic, everybody would automatically make the right decision.
Right, because it would be prohibitive. It cost prohibitive to all of us.
That we'd feedback think, loop. Don't really you would, want the you would have the information.
Loop. Right. It's not necessarily cost prohibitive. It's just cost aware.
Yes.
The feedback loop. Yeah. Well, my goodness, this time went so fast. I would love interview to just continue for a whole nother hour. And I'd love to say perhaps we could continue this discussion. Maybe this could be a regular conversation because
certainly
it's fun. It's exciting. I'm learning a tremendous amount. I hope our listeners are here on KCIW.
Well, it needs to be entertaining.
It does need to be entertaining. And hopefully it was. I think it is. I think this has been a fascinating conversation. To kind of wrap up, and we've just got one very, very short minute left here. Consciousness, choices, dedication to solving and voting with your dollars are the things that you said. And literally, give us 30 seconds. How can people find out more about your products and what you're doing?
Well, you can find us online at organicessence.com.
Organicessence.com.
O-R-G-E-S-S.com.
Org-S.com?
Uh-huh.
O-R-G-E-S-S.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we're firing up our Instagram, and we do have a Facebook. But I don't know. They're saying now that Facebook is evil. I don't know. But we're struggling with that and keeping that going. But I'm working on getting the word out. And I appreciate all of you spreading the words, taking these ideas to heart, thinking about them. And,
thank
and
you.
Talking to others.
I appreciate that. You've been listening to KCIW, the Ocean Mist Power Hour out of Brookings, Oregon, 100.7 FM on your dial. Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the great Pacific Northwest, about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S., home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet, as I'm sure you discovered here today with Ellery West. Where the mountains and the redwoods meet the sea, Harbor Brookings is home to me. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Ellery, we'd love to have you come back again as a guest in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miss.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.